with a few brief logistical
This meeting is now being recorded.
Comments. Among them, of course, a reminder that this machine just gave us that this meeting is an open meeting and that is it's going to be recorded. And then we're going to go through some of the core principles of the strategic plan. We have my vice chair, Judge Covarrubias, who's been intimately involved in developing the strategic action plan, and I thought it would be helpful for us to take just a few minutes to highlight some of the key points. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the logistics and the timeline and organization of the task force itself. We're going to have a lot of work to do in the next few months, and I want to give you a sense of how we've been discussing a structure that is meant to help us do it through subcommittees. And then last but certainly not least, it'll be really crucial for us to talk in this call about the very compressed timeline we have for engaging with the budget process. One of the challenges, as you'll see there, is the work that we will have to do is going to take a little while. That's why we need subcommittees. That's why we need your engagement and your help, trying to figure out how to make the strategic action plan a reality in counties as diverse as the ones we have in the system. That doesn't happen overnight, but by the same token, we also know that the work has to start now, and that will require us to make certain requests in the BCP budget process. So we want to engage you and give you an update on how we've been thinking about that and get your initial impressions. So with that, a couple of other quick preliminaries. I would like to remind everybody that you should be mindful of background noise because we've got a whole bunch of people on the call. So if you're not speaking, you are welcome to put us on mute. Now, since some of you are probably in institutional systems, if you put us on hold, there's always the risk that we're going to get theme music or music of some kind. So please be careful about putting us on hold. When you do speak, it'll be helpful if you announce your name first so everyone has a sense of who you are and where you're coming from. And please try to be as brief as you can. Also, remember that it's totally helpful to us if you follow up with additional perspectives or insights and bear in mind that this is the first of many opportunities we're going to get to interact with each other. So I'm very happy that the Chief Justice just finished making some final appointments for the task force. We had a great initial group of folks from within the branch, but it's been rounded out with some terrific people who have joined us. We've received many, many more nominations than open positions, which is always a little bit painful because there are so many great people. But that reflects a tremendous stakeholder interest in what we're doing, and that's great. That's very heartening because the issues could not be more important. As you know, we've got 7 million people throughout California that are limited English proficient, and they're the ones most directly affected by what we do in this process. But also, countless others are affected who are not necessarily limited English themselves, but who are involved in legal proceedings, who are in cases that need jurors, that are representative of the community. So really, everybody has an interest that's at stake here, and no doubt everybody on this call understands the urgency of our task. And so I won't belabor it, but I do want to underscore the very practical impact that we can have because we have a great strategic action plan. The question is now, how do we turn it into action? So with that, let me turn it over to Judge Covarrubias to spend just a few minutes highlighting what is not new to most of you, but I think will get us a good foundation to go forward, and that's some of the key principles and some of the logic behind the strategic action plan.
Justice Cuellar, could I just quickly finish calling roll?
That's fine, if we can do it quickly.
Sure. Naomi Adelson?
Present.
Thank you. Kevin Baker?
I'm here.
Thank you. Anna Maria Garcia? I think she had a conflict. Judge Hayashi?
Here.
Alexandra Johnson, I think, is joining us at 12:30. Yvette Pena?
Here.
Thanks, Yvette. Dr. Valdez, I think, has a conflict. Judge Walsh?
Here.
And Leah Wilson?
Here.
Thank you. Go ahead, Judge Covarrubias.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Justice Cuellar, for agreeing to take leadership in the on this task force. Again, the strategic plan for language access in California courts was adopted by the Judicial Council in January of this year. The plan was a result of an 18-month effort by the Joint Working Group, which some of you on the task force had the privilege to do the hard work to develop the plan. It was from the beginning, the intent of the work group to have an open, transparent process to develop the plan, in which why we had listening sessions and public hearings conducted throughout the state in the different areas before we had the draft plan and started working on the draft plan. This allowed us to obtain some very valuable input in information and participation from various stakeholders, including interpreters, including court executive officers, and some community members to give us their input and their perception of what would need to be included in the language access plan. And after a lot of hard work, a lot of meetings, all in compliance with our open meeting requirements, both on conference calls and in-person meetings, we prepared the final draft of the plan that was approved by the Judicial Council, or the Drug Working Group, I should say, and was again approved by the Council. When we presented the plan to the Judicial Council, we had the great fortune of Chief Justice announcing that she had appointed Justice Cuellar to lead our task force, and again follow up with some appointments of some of the individuals on the initial task force following the open nomination process for additional members to be joined in. The charge of this task force will be a 3 to 5 year charge to develop an implementation plan that we'll be presenting to the Judicial Council for hopeful approval. Some of the primary focuses of the task force will be to identify the costs associated with implementing this, all the goals and recommendations of the plan. Again, the plan itself has 8 major goals with 75 recommendations. We will be working with some of the related advisory groups, including the Court Interpreter Advisory Panel, which, again, was part of the work group, which is, again, primarily constituted of interpreters. We'll also be working with the Civil and Small Claims Advisory Committee, and also with CJER, which is the Center for Judicial Education and Research, which is the leading educational branch for judicial officers. We'll also be working with the Court Technology Advisory Committee, CTAC. We have participated with them in looking at some of the issues of technology which are addressed within the plan to help be more efficient and an appropriate use of technology to expand language access. One of the things that we acknowledge in the plan, and one of the things that we all were very mindful of, that we want to have uniformity, but also recognize a need to be somewhat flexible as we seek to implement and monitor and make appropriate adjustments to the plan, those depending, again, on its feasibility, not only the geographic and demographics of each particular county, and in some counties, each particular court has some distinctive demographics that they'll need to address, but also based on available resources. And resources, again, have always been mindful of the work group when we developed the plan, recognizing that the courts have had significant budget cuts, and the resource that we're looking to is additional funding specifically geared toward language access, and without dipping into the existing resource the court has, because that would just dilute the funds that have not been fully restored at this point in time, I should say. Finally, the task force will also be charged with establishing the necessary monitoring compliance plans with the strategic plan. That also includes a grievance procedure or complaint process where individuals who may believe that they have been denied language access will be able to register a complaint either to the quality of the language access service provided or the lack of language access provided, and also a complaint process and monitoring process for those who are providing the language access. It is a ambitious plan, and we recognize that funding is a key part, but we also recognize that there have been some efforts made by courts already who have been innovative, who are seeking to, again, expand language access for our limited English proficient court users. That's a nutshell of the plan, and if anyone has any questions concerning the task force charge, I'd be open to see if we can answer any questions that may be that you may have.
Thank you, Judge Covarrubia. Questions, comments at this point?
Well, Justice Cuellar, this is Brian Walsh. I'm a judge in Santa Clara County Superior Court. Could I speak?
Please, by all means.
Okay. Well, I want to say how pleased I am to be a part of this task force. I looked at the list on the roster, and I got to say, what a great group. I'm very interested as a trial judge and as a former presiding judge in this issue. It's been a great concern to all trial judges for many, many years. I know there's been varying interests in play in terms of arriving at the strategic plan, and there will be in the effort of this task force, but I'm encouraged that one aspect of the work has virtual unanimity, and that's that the huge importance of this issue and the commitment we must all have together to solve it. I know the trial courts, and I'm sure the judicial council, will be supportive of moving forward to address the great need to provide language access to all of our courts. It won't be easy. I know we can do it together, and I'm pleased that we have so many varying views that we're all committed to this same important task.
Thank you, Judge Walsh. That means a lot, I know, not only for me, but for a lot of people on this call. And I should just add that one of the key points that Judge Covarrubias mentioned, which is, of course, trying to find that elusive but crucial balance between uniformity and flexibility and doing so with the resources we need, I know you'll be crucial, and a lot of the voices on this call will be crucial in trying to make sure that we get that right.
Happy to help.
I'll just take a moment here to also give some recognition to Justice Maria Rivera, who, as you all know, played a crucial role in getting us that strategic action plan. It's been wonderful to work with her, to learn from her, and I know she's very enthusiastic about what we're trying to do here. And also, just a quick point about the timeline. 3 to 5 years sounds like a lot of time. My own view is it's nice to know that the Judicial Council recognizes that some of what we are going to try to do here is not going to happen overnight. But I don't want anybody to have any diminution in that sense of urgency when they hear something like 3 years, because that certainly does not mean that we want to wait that long to start getting things done, and we'll talk more about that when we get to the budget part. If there are no more comments at this point, I'm going to move on and talk a little bit about logistics and organization of the task force. And this will just be very brief, but I want you to know that after the chief appointed me to this role, I began to do some outreach. I consulted with folks across the branch and with Judge Covarrubias, with Justice Rivera, with a number of Judicial Council staff members. And the challenge that we were trying to take on is to figure out how to organize the work of the task force so that we could have a chance to deliberate as a group where needed, but also to leverage people being able to think through problems that are a little bit more specific. And, of course, it's worth doing that because we have more than one big challenge. And so after some further discussion and thinking about how to approach this, we came up with a tentative idea that we would have 4 subcommittees, and we do want to hear your thoughts about this because we can refine this, but the idea would be to basically come up with a structure that would give us one subcommittee to focus on technology issues, which can potentially play an interesting role here, not only with respect to possibly VRI if it's designed right as it is in the plan, but also perhaps with other ways that technology might play a role here. One subcommittee to deal with translation, signage, and tools for courts, to deal with all those aspects of language access that might involve signage, that might involve people coming into buildings, that might involve just immediate translation help to get a form done and whatnot. one subcommittee dealing with budget issues and also perhaps with monitoring implementation of language access across the state so that we know not only that resources are there to be used effectively, but that they're actually working and where the gaps are that might require further attention. And then last but certainly not least, one subcommittee dealing with language access education and standards so that we give due attention not only to making sure that we educate the branch itself, but also looking at folks who can play a key role as interpreters and making sure that the branch does what it can to help folks as they're coming in to make sure that we have the right number of people. Now, obviously, these subcommittees are going to be working closely with the Court Interpreters Advisory Committee, CIAP, and other advisory bodies in the Judicial Council. We would encourage that, right? So all of it would kind of push towards implementation of a lot of the Phase 1 recommendations that are in the Strategic Action Plan, and each subcommittee would have a sub-chair, so that we can make sure that we can assign to the subcommittee a kind of a point of contact who can help us pull that together, maybe even a co-chair structure, and then we'll also make sure that the staff that we have available, we can assign them to the subcommittees to make sure that they have the help that they need. Questions, comments? Don't be shy.
Justice Clare, this is Lori Zelon. Good afternoon. Just a question about that. As we work in subcommittees, some of the issues will cross over. And
yes.
Will staff be able to help us monitor that so that we aren't all going after the same thing at the same time?
It's a great question, and thank you for not only for joining us but for the question. So absolutely, the way we've set it up, it presumes that just as a matter of logic and practical reality, there's going to be some overlap. The most obvious example of that is that everything implicates budgets, and yet we have a committee working, taking a deeper dive into budget questions. But there are also other examples, language access education and translation, signage and technology, for example. So you're exactly right. Part of what we are looking to have staff do is to help us keep alert to where people are working on a similar related issue and then to attend to it in a couple different ways. We could say, well, look, you know, why don't we let one of these subcommittees first take the deepest dive into this and give us a sense of how it might play out, or we could say, why don't we form just an opportunity for folks to connect. It'll also help that the co-chairs of these subcommittees will be the folks that Judge Covarrubias and I will keep especially engaged with, so that we have not only our formal meetings, but an opportunity just to check in on procedural issues to make sure things are moving forward, and where these overlaps are identified, we can address them appropriately.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on the subcommittees?
Yes, sir. This is Susan Gonzalez. The subcommittees themselves, how is one involved with that? Is it an appointment, or do we nominate ourselves, or how would that transpire?
Great question. We would be delighted if you can reach out to our staff, including Doug Denton in particular as our point of contact, and if you have a particular interest in a certain subcommittee. My suggestion actually would be, it'd probably be ideal if you identify two, and we'll do our best to sort of see how we can sort people. But it is helpful for us to know if you have a particular interest, for example, in technology stuff or in translation and signage or in the LAP monitoring budget, that we know that so that we can take that into account. Doug, is there anything that you'd like to add on that score that would be helpful to you in just getting the input from people?
No, I've heard back from most people, but I'll follow up with people to find out your particular subcommittee interest. And Justice Zelon, to your point, the staffing is so consolidated on this that we'll all know what each other group is working on, so we'll make sure that we're as efficient as possible.
I don't want to give you the impression that it'll just be Doug working on all this, but I do want to acknowledge that some of this will be just partitions in Doug's head, and as long as he's got good communication between those partitions, it'll help us a lot.
This is Justice Marquez. So following up a little bit on Justice Zelon's question, it seems to me that one of the main concerns we're going to have or one of the base things we need to work on is as you implement anything, you need that feedback loop where it's happening. You need it to hear from the courts. You need to hear from the court interpreters. You need to hear from a variety of stakeholders. And in thinking about the subcommittee structure, how has thought been given to how that feedback from all of these decentralized groups and bodies and places will come up? Because as Laurie mentioned, everything is sort of interrelated. So the question goes to just the feedback mechanism from the courts and from the other stakeholders.
That's a great point, too. Look, I mean, we have one thing going for us, which is we've got both the whole task force structure and its open meetings that will help us funnel the need for outside input. The other thing we have going for us is the fact that a lot of outside input already came in the strategic action plan. But I would completely acknowledge that it's a further kind of input that you need when it comes to the brass tacks of how do you actually implement stuff. I think it'd be fine for the subcommittees to think through some aspect of an outreach strategy, but bearing in mind that I want that to happen in close consultation with Judge Covarrubias and me and with staff, because, again, we don't want to duplicate work, and this is one area where we can leverage the overall structure of the task force. Let me add something, because this will help all of you as you think about the role of the subcommittees, but also the kind of outreach we're looking for. Ideally, we want the subcommittees to think really hard about tasks that can be completed within a year, i.e., you know, let's say June 2015 to June 2016. So it's like a year plus as we start to operate now, and that are going to produce some sort of demonstrable deliverable of some kind, parallel to thinking about the bigger picture questions that might involve more than 12 months. But it's very important, and Judge Covarrubias and I have talked about this and talked about it with staff, and in fact I've talked about it with the chief a couple times, that we keep our eye on the ball and make sure we don't turn this all into a mechanism that is about the medium term. There is so much in that strategic action plan that can get done quickly, and in fact, that's one of the reasons why we were putting a lot of emphasis on making sure we interface with the budget process at this point as well as in succeeding years.
Justice Coyer, this is Judge Covarrubias. I also think that having many on the task force who are involved in the judicial in the strategic plan is crucial, and I think that's why some of you were appointed to the task force, because many of you were involved in the overall process and knowing how it's interrelated and knowing that some of the things have already been discussed and refer back to the plan so we can focus in somewhat, but I think it will need to be done as a priority on some of those specific areas of what can be accomplished, needs to be accomplished now as a high priority. So I think it's very beneficial for us as a task force having those many on the task force who are also involved in the development of the strategic plan.
Exactly. Let me add one other thing to the mix and just take any last few questions or comments about logistics. As you'll see, this is going to give substance to my comment about, like, well, okay, 3 to 5 years sounds like a long period of time, but we're hitting the ground running. We're trying to move as fast as we can. So you'll note that the timeline is really pretty ambitious. We've got this call going on right now. We've got a first in-person task force meeting that will take place June 17th in San Francisco. I hope as many of you as possible can join us. You all matter, and I want you at the table. We've got a first community meeting to work on some of this outreach in August 2015. And then in the fall of 2015, we will need to circle back with the Judicial Council to tell them about our progress. And some of it will be process, all we've done, but my hope is that by then we will also be in a position to be hearing back from some of the subcommittees, getting a sense of what might be on that list of early things that we can get done in the course of 12 months or less. We're going to have a second task force meeting in December 2015, second community meeting in early 2016, February or March, and then a third task force meeting in April or May 2016 to help us complete our progress on what you could call phase one, these things that really are implementable in short order. But also my hope is that by then we'll have a much clearer sense of what the medium term looks like and what are the thorniest challenges we'll need to face in the year after that. The timeline obviously also includes budget issues, and I'm going to talk about those in a moment because those are really important. But apart from the budget issues, I want to see if anybody has any more comments or questions about the timeline or anything else that's logistics related.
Justice Coyer, there, Judge Covarrubias again.
Yep.
Just one item. I've been informed that one of our members of the task force is deaf and may be using an assistive device or interpreter for translating to her or interpreting for her in sign. I'm not sure which it is. So if I know we have a lot to cover, and so I want to make sure that the interpreter or Ms. Gonzalez can indicate that if we're going too fast, to let us know so we can slow down to make sure that she can hear and follow what is being said.
I'm grateful for the reminder, and I should add that in general we have picked the task force in addition to looking for people who might be able to respond positively to Judge Covarrubias' sense of humor and mine. We've certainly tried to work to make it quite representative of a lot of the different concerns that we think are really crucial, and the deaf community is definitely a part of that.
Justice Cuellar, hi. This is Yvette Pena from Los Angeles. I had a quick question. I was under the impression that there was a committee of the Judicial Council working on technology issues, and that one of the issues that they were looking at was VRI.
Yes. So this is a perfect example of the coordination that was alluded to earlier by Justice Zaylon that will be really necessary here. My sense is that the Judicial Council has a structure that has been working well for taking close looks at different technology issues, and VRI-related stuff has come up. By the same token, the Strategic Action Plan calls for a fairly specific set of standards that we need to develop that are really safeguards to make sure that due process and all the various concerns that have been brought to the table potentially about VRI are considered as we develop pilot programs. I see the technology committee.
Hi, this is Alexandra Johnson joining
welcome.
In. I apologize
Thank you.
That I'm late.
No worries. So I see the technology committee as an important resource for us, but are having a separate technology committee is in part designed to make sure that we can keep a fast timeline and address the specifics of what the Strategic Action Plan requires us to do.
Okay, thank you.
Justice Cuellar, this is Terry Berniers. Wanted to mention, I chair the Court Technology Advisory Committee. VRI is one of the items on our work plan for this year, and obviously one of the reasons I believe the chief appointed me to this committee is so we can coordinate those efforts.
Terrific. And I'm grateful, and thank you for your service and for being willing to take on yet another responsibility. Okay, so what I'll do now is turn our attention and the time we have left really to budget issues. And this is a place where right off the bat I will tell you that this is where the perfect and the reality clash, and so we have to try to see if the perfect, we can avoid a scenario where the perfect is the enemy of the good. And what I mean very specifically is that the work we have to do in the task force requires resources. Everybody on the call knows that. We also need time. The comments we've gotten so far, the sense of even possible overlaps between the different subcommittees and between the task force and the technology committee and other parts of the Judicial Council, they reflect the fact that these things are going to take some time to work through. But by the same token, we are very eager not to miss a very compressed budget window to at least begin the process of finding resources that we need to make some of the elements of the Strategic Action Plan a reality. So that's what we are struggling with, and we do have a sense that one important approach to that can be to start the conversation now, to give you a sense of how we've been thinking about some potential priorities here. We've got six in particular that we'd like to flag: interpreter services in civil matters, training and signage grant program, which we think we can do some real headway on, and on-site trial court support for language access program, VRI, form translation, and then, of course, this task force itself, that we think of as good candidates to make that initial request. We do want to hear your reactions, and we need to think through this a little bit more. But I'm going to ask Donna, who's on the call, to expand a little bit on the time compression we have and some of the immediate steps that might be taken to allow us to interface with the budget process. So what we hope will happen is that in this conversation and some succeeding correspondence and conversations and meetings, we'll have an opportunity to flesh out what that initial set of requests and priorities might be, and then, as Donna will describe, we'll have to interface with the whole BCP process. But then, as we get the subcommittees off the ground, what is frankly the more urgent, not more urgent, but the more important work that takes a little bit more time, we'll be thinking about the budget issues really over a longer period of time. So you know, starting from whatever request we make this year, but now thinking 24 months, 36 months into the future, how do we set these priorities? How do we set the right numbers? How do we figure out the resources that we need? So with that, let me turn it over to Donna to just say a little bit more about the budget process, and then we'll say just a few brief words about each of these priorities, and we'll open it up for discussion.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. For those of you on the task force that I haven't met yet, my name is Donna Hershkowitz. I'm the director of the Court Operations Services Office, which includes, among several others, the Court Language Access Support Program. Just a little bit of background on where we are on the budget cycle. As shocking as this may be to hear, we are at the point where we need to put together our proposals for funding for the 16-17 fiscal year, which means the year from July 1, 2016 to June 30th, 2017. The reason we need to do that at this point, the timeline for the judicial branch to submit budget change proposals to the Department of Finance and the governor for the 16-17 fiscal year is in September. It's usually the second week, the first or second week in September. To avoid the crush that we have had in the past couple of years, the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, which considers the budget proposals and makes recommendations to the Judicial Council on budget proposals that they would recommend the Council pursue for the fiscal year, they have moved up the timeline and want to present those concepts to the Judicial Council at their June meeting. So in order for the Judicial Council to receive these recommendations from the Budget Advisory Committee in June, the Budget Advisory Committee is meeting in May. If we want to present to them some proposals for funding, for budget concepts that would provide funding for trial court-related costs for this implementation plan, we need to get those recommendations to them in advance of their May 18th meeting. So that really means within about a week and a half or so, in order to meet all of the open meetings deadlines, we need to give them our recommendations, your recommendations for what we think we should pursue for that first year of funding for 2016-2017. Is that enough background, Justice Quayle?
That's perfect. That's exactly what I think will help folks understand some of what I've been hearing over the last few weeks, which really gave me a sense that we needed to turn to these issues right away. So, and let me just underscore one point that Donna mentioned before, just turning to interpreter services and civil matters. We are very aware that this is just the opening part of the process. There is no way we can do all the work necessary to fully scope a budget plan for language access that will meet the needs of these 7 million people across the state and that will fit the mix of diversity and unity that we need in the state in the next few weeks and days. What is very urgent from our perspective is that we not miss at least an opportunity, however, to take advantage of this first budget window so that while we are working through the rest of the issues, we buy ourselves some crucial time and we see some resources hopefully come in. And with that, let me just start the process. Yep.
This is Judge Waltz. Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Or ask
sure.
Donna a question? That's a pretty scary deadline. But separate from 16-17, is there any thought of putting any BCPs in? And if so, what's the deadline for that? Would it be the same?
For 15-16, Judge Walsh?
Right, 15-16.
So, yeah, at this point, that window has closed. Although the governor has not yet issued the May revision, that would have the last opportunity to have submitted proposals for the governor to include in the May revision would have been in February, and we were unable to meet that deadline to get those proposals in for funding that would begin effective July 1. We were trying to see if we could sneak in some things that were some sort of really obvious recommendations from the strategic plan that we were certain would require some funding, but the timeline just really didn't work. And in order to make sure there was all of the appropriate buy-in from all of the necessary parties. There just wasn't time to run it through that process.
Right. So the earliest that we could get funding would be starting July 1, 2016.
Correct.
Correct.
If we get something to...
Correct, which we intend to. Just to add here, this is exactly why I felt that sense of urgency, because I felt like we can... You know, talk till the cows come home, but if we don't start getting some of these resources in, we're really going to be setting ourselves back.
Donna, this is Terry Berniers again. In terms of the 16-17 fiscal year and the BCPs that Judge Walsh was talking about, my understanding of the timelines in terms of what we've dealt with in the past is September would be about the last date to get a placeholder BCP in. Is that right?
Right. So in September, we would submit to the Department of Finance the BCPs for 16-17 for consideration for inclusion in the governor's proposed budget that he would release on January 10. And so at that point, we would typically like to put in fully fleshed out BCPs. We certainly have in the past on occasion had to put in some placeholder BCPs to alert the Department of Finance and the governor to the issue, while we're still working out maybe some of the extent of some of the costs or some of the specifics. Obviously, then there's an option to get something into the May revise that following year, so a year from now, for items that maybe weren't able to get into the governor's proposed budget, or additional items that have come to our attention that we conclude are worth some consideration on the sort of the short-term consideration to get into the 16-17 budget. So those would be our opportunities, submitting a BCP in September or submitting a BCP or what's called a spring finance letter, which is a BCP in the spring, for consideration for the May revise, which is done in February, despite the fact that that's not spring.
So these are good questions, and they really go to why we're talking about this now. What I want to do is just take 5 or 6 minutes to have us go through just very briefly why we identified some of these as potential priorities, and then we'll continue the discussion. The interpreter services in civil matters, this really is not rocket science. The strategic action plan calls on us to basically go forward to try to cover interpreters in civil and to do that fully as much as we can and as quickly as we can. That requires funds that are not currently present. Essentially, the surplus funds have been depleted that were available, so getting the right amount of funding into the 45-45 fund is pretty crucial. And what made us feel like this was a window of opportunity is there is a good deal of interest in this. It obviously takes additional resources. We have to figure out how to go forward and come up with an estimating formula or methodology that will let us make more precise planning estimates here. But as an initial matter, it seemed quite clear that this should be one of the things we talked about. Donna, you want to talk a little bit about the signage and training grant program?
Yes. Thank you, Justice Claire. One of the other things that we thought might be some of the low-hanging fruit, for lack of a better term, some of the things that really are important things to start, getting folks some entry here into language access. The strategic plan had recommended that there be training for court interpreters on civil cases and remote interpreting. The plan recommended appropriate signage and wayfinding throughout the courthouses. And what we were thinking made sense is instead of the task force identifying one or the other as a priority for each of the 58 courts, we know that the courts will have their own priorities, will have their own needs. We certainly couldn't fund all signage and wayfinding all at once. But if we created effectively a grant program and identified a certain amount of money in a BCP and said, we give us $500,000, give us $1 million, and then the courts would apply and say, I want to use it for training for civil cases. I want to use it for training for interpreters on remote interpreting. I want to use it to provide signs in this one courthouse or three of my 50 courthouses. So giving the courts the option to figure out what made the most sense for their particular court and their particular court users as opposed to us dictating sort of one or the other. We thought that that might be a good opportunity to address those, to begin to address those recommendations from the plan.
Great. And then briefly, just a word or two on the trial court support for language access.
Yeah. So as part of, I would look at this proposal two ways. One of the responsibilities of this task force is going to be monitoring implementation of the language access plan. And one of the things that we also strongly want to do is assist courts in cataloging all of their needs, everything that they are doing, everything that they want to be doing to follow the recommendations of the language access plan. And because the recommendations in the plan are so broad and varied, right, they include early identification of language needs that the courts would need to do, changing case management systems to track the provision or denial of language services, training of court staff, training of judicial officers, a variety of recommendations, frankly, to provide meaningful access to justice. So what we were thinking might be helpful is if courts had some on-site support for monitoring their implementation, for figuring out what they needed to do, how they wanted to roll out their implementation, requesting a language access specialist for one or more for 58 courts would be quite a budget request. And so what we were thinking would be at least starting with three language access specialists for each of the four interpreter regions. So there would be 12 language access specialists. We would envision that these would be hired and housed in one or more of the courts in each region. So this would be funding that would go to the trial courts to hire these language access specialists. And they would assist the courts with the language access issues, including the assessment of the court's needs, implementation, training. So there would be three of them for each of the four interpreter regions.
Thank you. And just before we open it up to discussion, Judge Covarrubias, maybe you could say a quick word about VRI, although, of course, most everybody knows about it, so you only have to mention just a few seconds, and then our emphasis possibly on form translation and multilingual videos.
Yes, thank you, Jeff Square. With VRI, everyone knows that there has been a pilot project before when it was done with the deaf community and sign language, and one of the recommendations that we've used is some of the protocols that were in place, so we can use that. But it has also called for some pilot projects to be funded to look at the efficiency, look at what issues will really need to be addressed, and to see also the cost efficiency to get the data to ensure that this will reduce and allow for a more efficient use. And working with the technology committee, will also go out and make sure that these different programs are available, can interface, so there can be communication in different courts using interpreters and hopefully reducing some of the travel and other costs. The form translations, it's always something to have uniformity. Instead of courts having to bring up their own forms, we can have some uniformity in translation. Many of the individuals that are limited English proficient also have some reduced ability to read and write, and so the video technology can something be used also to provide information and using that they've done in the past and develop programs where we would have those done in a multilingual, with multilingual translation. And the last with the implementation task force, not only the funds we need to allow the task force to meet and have it have their meetings and do it work that needs to be done, but one of the things we also think is crucial was very beneficial for the joint working group in developing the plan was having a consultant that would be taking out some of the laboring or on this, recognizing staff, judicial staff is limited, but having the a consultant to kind of put everything together and keep on track of everything is very essential, just as the language access coordinator who has access to all the information, technology, all the developments. I think that would help also with the efficiency and being mindful of all the different things that are transpanding in language access. Thank you, Justice.
Thank you, Judge Covarrubias. So now we have some time for comments, reactions, questions.
Justice Cuellar, this is Dennis Hayashi. I wanted to say that I support all of the suggestions that have been made here. I just had a quick question or comment about whether or not consideration could or should be given to perhaps also including among possible budget priorities information on language access services to be provided to the community and the issue of translation of court orders that are made in cases.
That's very interesting, and we will put this on the list of things to consider. Thank you for the comment.
Justice Clare, this is Leah Wilson from Alameda. I just want to make sure I understand. So the recommendation is to move forward with four priorities: civil expansion, the statewide kind of language access specialists, signage, the funding for signage, and other court location type of materials, and then the fourth one related to VRI. So four priorities.
I actually have down six priorities. Hopefully as I go through them, that they'll ring a bell. So we've got interpreter services in civil matters.
Okay.
We've got training and signage and maybe structured as a grant program for trial courts.
Okay.
We've got the language access specialists that would be on site and, you know, short of literally blanketing the state with them, starting with three of them per region roughly. We've got VRI, that's number four. We've got the point on form translation and multilingual video that Judge Covarrubias was mentioning, and then the task force itself, which, you know, is not a huge item, but certainly we want to get the resources we need to get stuff done. So, and then beyond that, of course, there may be space for some of the other things that are being mentioned, and we'd have to sort of think about how these different things relate, because there may be some things people mentioned that fall into these categories or that may implicate additional things that we haven't covered.
Thank you.
This is Judge Austin.
Hi, Judge.
Hi. I am very excited about the language access specialist proposal.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the hardest things we learned through the plan process will be connecting the big picture and the training issues and others at the local level. This would be a bridge between the two. And I think it'll be it's exciting, and it's a great idea.
It's great to get that feedback. Thank you.
Justice Rubius, this is Mike Roddy in San Diego. I think knowing the technical work that's going to be required in order to support a request of this nature in these six areas, given the time frame available, while ambitious, I think it is doable, and it gives us a place to start. I know that it's probably not what members of the committee would ultimately like to see. But again, given the very short time frame and what's going to be required really substantively to support these, I think it's a good approach.
Thank you. I appreciate the comment as well. And I want to highlight something you said. The technical work to support this time around, and then when we have further requests, I think that really does deserve careful attention, because not just at the legislative stage, but at the Department of Finance stage and within the branch, we want to make sure we make the best possible case for this.
This is Jose Varela. I'm the public defender in Marin County, and I very much appreciate all the suggestions that have been made. I'd like to follow up on a suggestion that was made by Judge Covarrubias with regard to the consultant. I'm hoping that the consultant will have California-based sort of expertise. And the reason I say that is that some of the things going on with this plan could actually cause us to sort of partner and use the leverage experience and to be honest with you, the infrastructure of other parts of state government. For example, I think about signage. We might be able to do a partnership with Caltrans, who does signs all the time. And the reason I bring stuff like that up is those are the kinds of things that, as we're asking for budget, they're looking for. Are you looking at current resources that could assist you in this long-term sort of project? And I know that a lot of departments of public works around the state have already done numerous translations of signage in San Francisco, San Jose, other places. So I'm hoping that the consultant who comes in is savvy enough to be able to give this committee the opportunity to look to a partner with others in the state and thereby making this a more cost-effective and more workplace-inclusive sort of process.
Thank you. That is a terrific suggestion.
Justice Cuellar, this is Kevin Baker. If I may just revisit the budget timing issue.
Sure.
I appreciate that the window for seeking anything in the governor's May revise is probably effectively closed. But I wonder if any thought has been given to the possibility of approaching the legislature for augmentation of the governor's budget. And I say that knowing that there's a very compressed time period. But I do think that it would be useful potentially to begin this discussion with the legislature as early as possible. And even something that was limited but targeted and that might appeal to legislative leadership, I think could potentially be a productive conversation. So I want to just put that out there and happy to assist if there's any way I can do that.
Thank you. I'm grateful and certainly we'll look at every option. I'm very happy to try to explore a way to do that. I want to balance that with a sense that I think part of our legitimacy and our power in this will come from speaking with one voice as a branch in a way. And so I want to make sure that we put our ducks in a row inside the branch, but by the same token also explore opportunities like the one you're describing.
This is John Conklin in Fresno, Your Honor. And Donna, I hate to repeat this, but could you just give us our most immediate budget deadline that we should be concerned with to make sure that we're addressing that?
Certainly, Judge. So we need to submit something to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, and that's with regard to those items that that would be requesting an augmentation for trial court budgets. So, for example, for the funding of this task force itself, that would be the Judicial Council budget. It would go through a different process. But the most immediate thing is the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee meets May 18th. In all likelihood, they need to post their materials by, I would guess, May the 12th, the latest. So we would need to have them our recommendations written up and into them before that date.
All right. So that's 2 weeks.
That's moments from now.
Correct.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right. So do you have any advice for us on something, just a broad-based proposal we can make immediately? We've used the term placeholder, but something we can do to have an appropriate notice of the broad budget we're asking for?
Well, let me put it this way. I think, and Donna, feel free to jump in, but in thinking about your question, which I think is an entirely fair one, what I would say is what we hope to get from this conversation is, barring any huge objection to thinking of these priorities and maybe a few others people have mentioned as a placeholder, what we'd like to do is then do some of the technical work that was alluded to so that we can actually match that to a set of numbers and then be in a position in the tiny amount of time we have between now and, say, 10 or 12 days from now, put some numbers to that, keep you all posted, and give you a sense of where it all lands. But to still take advantage of that window.
If a motion's in order, but I would move that those six priorities be in that place and that we propose a budget for those. I agree with you. I think we need to move on this yesterday, and the quickest those priorities are, I think, very effective.
I find that very helpful, and I want to ask if there's any further discussion at this point or if we can or if I hear a second.
This is Joanne Lee from the Legal Aid Foundation of Los Angeles, and I just wanted to ask a quick question.
Sure.
Or
by all
comment
means.
On the training component of the signage training grant program. Does that also include training of court staff and judicial officers to ensure that the implementation is done consistently and efficiently, and also to ensure cultural competency in dealing with LEP litigants, or is that absorbed or part of another existing budget item?
This particular item is limited to the recommendations that dealt with training for court interpreters on civil cases and remote interpreting. There are quite a number of recommendations that dealt with education and training for judicial officers and court staff, and those would be addressed differently. We may or may not need need a budget request for that, depending on how those trainings are put together. We'd be working very closely with our CEJR governing committee to identify what kind of how to deliver that training and education, what funding may or may not be necessary for that. So those would be part of a separate discussion.
But, Donna, I would take that just to clarify to mean that certainly in working out the details for the grant program, we wouldn't necessarily exclude proposals and ideas that would involve broader kinds of training. It's just that you're making the point that there may be other ways we can address the training in addition to point number two here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can certainly broaden it to be training for interpreters on civil cases and remote interpreting, training for judges and for judicial officers and court staff, sort of whatever kinds of innovative programs the courts feel like they would be prepared to undertake.
Great. Any last comments or questions before we decide on this resolution?
This is Justice Marquez, and I sat on the strategic planning committee, or the committee that came up with the LAP. And with the community hearings, what we heard an awful lot about was something that Judge Hayashi brought up, was the information to community partners and information about current access that's available. And it strikes me that that's a low-cost item and one that could be done or should be done sooner rather than later. So I guess I'm going to suggest not just limiting us to the six things that are given, but if you guys, you said you would think about Judge Hayashi's suggestion, and I hope you can also, if it's appropriate, include that that component to it as well.
Okay. So without prejudice to further refinement here, what I'm going to suggest is that we incorporate the possibility of some attention to information to community partners as well in this initial plan, and I would treat this as a friendly amendment.
And Justice Cuellar, if I may, this is Donna. I appreciate, Justice Marquez, that you had sort of talked about it as a sort of low-cost item. Staff have been going through the recommendations and putting some thoughts to which are low-cost items and which are no-cost items potentially, and which are items that might require new funding or funding augmentations from through the budget process. And so some of these we're not putting forward to you, not because they're not phase one, not because they're any less important, but because we think that they may be more no-cost or low-cost items.
But that said, I think, you know, the way I'm thinking of this amended package, it would call on us to at least take a good hard look to see if there are monies that could be used and requested at this point to support that, even if in small amounts. We'd want to try to include it if we could.
Yeah, I think the grant program that we're talking about is a great way to do that. So even if it's a low-cost item, if it's not money that that a trial court had prepared to spend, low-cost or not, they may not have the resources to do it.
Gotcha.
So by putting it into the grant program, even some of those low-cost items, they might give the courts the ability to do something that they couldn't.
Donna, when we've had a task force member's polled on a conference call before, what is logistically speaking the best way to do that? Should people send an email to you, or how does that work?
You can certainly say it's up to you, but you can ask for, you know, all members in support say aye, any noes. You can certainly do
okay.
It that way. And if it looks like we're having that the vote is close, then
gotcha.
Then Douglas can just take the roll.
All right, so we're going to be a little pragmatic about it, and I'm going to say, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. I don't think it's close on this particular occasion, but I do want to underscore, we will have opportunities to talk about budget issues a great deal in our journey together. I will say I am grateful for not only the support of this task force and its initial ideas about the budget, but also the suggestions and feedback we've gotten at this stage of the game. I think it will take some creativity and originality. I want to further underscore a comment one of you made about how part of this will be how we message it, how we describe it to others and explain where we're being innovative and where we're being creative, but at the same time also how we try to marry this up with the broader concerns and priorities that the judiciary has. So I'm grateful. We'll get to work. We will keep you posted in the next few days about how this is coming together, and we'll give you updates. I want to give Judge Covarrubias a chance to make any last closing comments, and I will note that we are ending just about on time.
Thank you, Justice Cuellar. First of all, again, I want to thank everyone for having attended, and this meeting is very, very productive. I want to thank you, Justice Cuellar, for having selected me to act as your vice chair, and want to echo the comments you made about the work that Justice Rivera did on the strategic plan. She was very instrumental, and it was just a great pleasure working with her and with everyone else on the plan. We remind everyone that we have this plan that has been adopted by the Judicial Council, and there's a lot of things we can even do during the interim time. There's some budget issues that we certainly have to address. One example I'll just indicate to you, last Friday, we received a request from the Riverside Court, who had their judges retreat, and asked that one of us be able to make a presentation to them, which is kind of in line with the plan that the judicial branch be informed of the plan, of its processes, and what we intend to do and what contains in it. Many of us were not able to go out to Banning where the meeting was held, but we were able to do it, though I was able to do it by video remote, and because Riverside had been part of the project for video remote interpreting along with Ventura County. And so I was able to make a short presentation to them via technology, which is another example where we need to be innovative. And many courts are being innovative, and we don't want to discourage anyone from being innovative, and when they have an innovative project, to pass that on to us so we can have this as part of the implementation toolkit that we hope to develop for everyone to use. But again, I want to thank everyone. We have a lot of hard work to do. Remind everyone to advise Douglas of their choices of where they'd like to be on the subcommittee for the task force. And again, appreciate everyone's participation and great comments.
Thank you, everyone, and I look forward to seeing you in person at our first in-person meeting. Talk to you soon.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.